my first guest this morning, Cillian de Gascoigne, who is a member of NPHET and director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory. Good morning, Cillian.
Morning, Brendan.
So, Cillian, I think we went into a bit of a spiral of panic and despair there yesterday, which seemed to be pulling back a little bit from overnight. Is it justified, panic and despair?
Probably not. I think there's a lot of unknowns at the moment, but I think we're right to be concerned, because if we look at Omicron, the new variant, it's far more divergent than any of the viruses that we've seen to date, any of the variants that we've seen to date. And by that, I mean that it has more amino acid changes across the genome, and particularly in the spike protein, than we've seen in the other variants. And as people will know at this stage, the spike protein is what's contained in the vaccine. The spike protein is what's responsible for infecting our cells, and ultimately is what's responsible for transmissibility. So some of the changes we have seen before, and we have an idea what they do, and we know that they do increase transmissibility, which is a concern. We also know that they might have an impact on antibody response, which is a concern. And then there are other mutations that we haven't seen before, and we're not too sure what they do, but their location in the spike protein concerns us. Now, the other thing...
What would be the worry here? What could happen? Real world scenario.
So the worry is that because it's so far removed from the original virus, is that we would see more reinfections, even in people who have been infected before, and we would see an impact on vaccine effectiveness. So even if you've been vaccinated, that they may not be as effective against this variant.
Okay, but vaccines will still be effective to some extent.
Well, see, to my mind, I think they will be. I think that's really important for people to remember, because we have seen other variants. We've seen Alpha, we've seen Delta. They're quite divergent as well. They're very far removed from the original virus. But we know that the vaccines we have still protect against severe disease and against hospitalization. We know that they're not as effective against infection, but we know that they protect against severe disease and hospitalization. And to my mind, at least, there's no reason to believe that the vaccines won't be effective against Omicron. Like, it is important to remember, there's no evidence at this stage that the vaccines are not effective against this variant. Mm. There is concern,
because,
but there's no evidence.
Only a quarter of the people in South Africa are vaccinated, aren't they?
Well, exactly. And you alluded to, when you're going through the papers there, you're saying they have a very low rate of infection and very small case numbers at the moment in South Africa. So they're coming off a low base. So there's been a little bit of a narrative that this virus has come across.
It tripled in 3 days in some area, but that could be from a low base, you're saying.
Exactly. So it is from a low base. And there's a bit of a narrative saying that this has displaced Delta, which is not really true. The Delta wave they had brought it under control. Now, it still may well be outcompeting Delta. It may be more transmissible, but because the numbers are so small, there may be other confounders that we haven't really figured out yet. So, for example, I don't know the epidemiology on the ground, but for example, a large super spreading event may well have just got this virus into lots of communities very quickly, and in the absence of a competing virus, it has taken off.
But am I right in thinking as well, you said there about this narrative that it's outcompeting Delta. Delta has been fairly resilient against a few other variants already, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's been all Delta for the last 6 months really across the world, because what we're seeing now, certainly in Ireland and most of the world, is that we've got sublineages of Delta and evolving Delta sublineages over the last few months. So nothing has really come to displace Delta at this stage, because it's been the most transmissible. And that would be a concern. Something more transmissible than Delta would certainly be very concerning, purely because transmissibility ultimately does convert into cases and does convert into hospitalizations.
People, yeah. But I suppose what we would worry about as well is how sick it makes people. And I know, again, limited evidence, but you heard Dr. Anjali Kutsi, who seems to be the head of the South African Medical Association, but who also seems to be a doctor working at the epicentre of where it is. And she's saying what we're seeing is a lot of very, very mild cases. I gather that person in Belgium isn't very sick either. And obviously, none of that's evidence. But
no, but you're absolutely right, because that's really what will be important for us to see, is how many of these cases end up in hospitalisation and intensive care admissions and ultimately death. So you are right. So that's why it's important. To be fair, we need to recognise the work that the South Africans have done, and by sharing their information so early on. But
they're regretting it now.
Downside of that, obviously, is now we've 2 to 3 weeks to wait until we have really hard scientific evidence that we can use in the context of severity of disease and in the context of the impact on vaccine effectiveness. But the other thing that's really important as a global community, in order to encourage people to share their data in future is that we can't just abandon the South Africans, because the South Africans may well be at the start of a new wave now of infection. So what we should be doing, in addition to trying to prevent, to reduce importations into our own countries, we should actually be trying to help them control it there. Because if it doesn't get out of control there, then that has to have a beneficial effect for everybody. And we also need to roll out vaccines globally.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that conversation has kicked off again. I see Joe Biden again saying last night that America very much in favour of loosening the
absolutely IP while closing the borders.
Yeah, yeah. Remember Donald Trump closed the borders, and he was being likened to all kinds of awful people from history for it. But there you go. Thinking changes. Listen, is it likely that it is here? And we don't know.
Yes, it is. I won't say it's likely, but it's certainly possible. Because we're fortunate in some respects that we don't, much like, I suppose, the original sort of outbreak in Wuhan, we don't have direct flights to many of the countries involved. Now, obviously, we have links to many of the international hubs. But one of the positive things, if I can say that, about this new variant is that, and people will be sick of hearing about the S-gene dropout and S-gene target failure, but it does have the same deletion that Alpha had. So we can monitor it in real time. We have the Thermo Fisher TACPath assay in operation in our NBRL satellite lab in Back Weston. So that will give us an indication.
Did I see that it actually shows up on a PCR without doing any genomic sequencing? Is that correct?
So that's the test that I'm talking about. So
just putting it into English for you there. Yeah.
Thanks very much. So yeah, so the PCR test we use in Back Weston is three targets. And with Alpha, one of the targets wasn't detected. With Delta, that changed again. So Delta detected all three targets because it didn't have the deletion. But now with Omicron, it has the deletion again. So what we would expect to see is S-gene target failure. So what we're doing
just again for English, if there is a case of Omicron from here on in, now that we know what we're looking for, it'll show up in that person's PCR test, and alert will go off without there being any sequencing done.
So not exactly, because we won't be able to get all the tests through this particular platform. Okay. So there'll be a limited capacity. But what it will allow us to do is to carry out surveillance and to monitor the general population prevalence. So there'll be a reasonable sample of a few thousand samples a day going through this platform. So what we're doing at the moment is, in conjunction with the public health guidance that came out last night, we're going back to the start of November to see if we have any S-gene target failures, and if we have any of those, then we'll prioritize those for enhanced contact tracing and for whole genome sequencing.
Okay, and if there's an S-gene target failure, that means that it's potentially Omicron.
Exactly, potentially.
Or does Omicron. It mean it is Omicron?
No, it doesn't. No. Exactly. There are other lineages that would have that deletion as well, but certainly Omicron would be the most concerning at this point in time. Delta doesn't have it, so if it's there, it's something that we would be looking into.
Okay, now we've seen a case in Belgium confirmed, and like the worrying thing there slightly is probably that person is home from Egypt, which is also North Africa.
Also
they've been home for 11 days before symptoms presented. So I guess a likelihood they might have picked it up in Belgium, with a case now confirmed in Germany. If this is in Europe now, people who are thinking of coming home here for Christmas from Europe, or people who are thinking of travelling in Europe over the next while, do you think, are we likely to see the kind of travel measures that we saw before come back in more strongly?
Within Europe, I don't know is a short answer, but I would hope not, because we still have a very high proportion of vaccinated people within the European region, and vaccines are still the key measure to protect against all variants. So I would say that to people, if they haven't been vaccinated, please go and get vaccinated, and then for those who are being off call for their boosters, to please go and present. But I think we can continue to allow travel while introducing some additional measures, whether that's the pre-travel PCR and maybe a post-arrival PCR.
Do you think we should do that right now?
I think we need to get a better picture of the extent of where the virus is. As you said yourself, or as you alluded to yourself, realistically, viruses don't recognise borders. So by the time you're closing borders, typically the virus has already spread well beyond them. So it's not necessarily an effective measure. But what you can do is reduce the risk of exporting cases by pre-travel PCR. Exactly. And also the measures that we've introduced at the moment with post-travel sort of quarantine and two PCRs. That's a good way of trying to minimise the risk of importation. Okay.
But you wouldn't be thinking we're looking at quarantine for people coming home from England, Europe this Christmas.
I would certainly hope not. But again, I suppose we'll have to see what happens over the next coming weeks and how widespread this virus is. Like, there's certainly no indication at this stage that it's widespread in Europe. We're looking at small case numbers, and obviously other countries have been doing a large amount of sequencing like ourselves, and we're not seeing any evidence for it at this point.
Okay, but you wouldn't be ruling that out?
No, at this stage, I couldn't rule anything out, to be honest.
Okay.
But I think that, I suppose, if I could just give a couple of positive features. Firstly, there's no evidence that this virus will have any impact on the antivirals that we have. They both target different regions. They don't target the spike protein. They target two different enzymes. So there'll be no impact on the antivirals when they roll out. And as I said, when people get boosted, there's every evidence that there's every indication that the vaccines will have a protective effect against severe disease and hospitalization.
Okay. So we've ramped up the, apparently anyway, ramped up the boosters, and people 50 plus now going to start getting theirs in the middle of December, when we also, I think, get the first batch of doses for kids, 500,000, 5 to 11 year olds. Like, should we have been more urgent about the boosters all along? We're coming very late to this now and kind of in a bit of a panic with it, aren't we? And are we going to have a massive backup then if we're trying to then do all the kids as well, and we're still only down to 50 with boosters and everything? Did we drop the ball here?
I don't think we did, to be honest, because I think we, if you look at how we're comparing with the majority of other countries, we're actually moving fairly quickly on the boosters. Like, we did have to take a couple of things into account. Firstly, was the evidence really to see how they worked. Obviously, Israel was probably the first mover, but when they introduced their boosting campaign, they also introduced strict measures of lockdown, essentially, as well. There were other non-pharmaceutical interventions. So trying to tease out which was most effective was a factor. Obviously, the UK moved fairly quickly as well. But I think what we had to look at was also that global picture and global equity and fairness, because, you know, as Mike Ryan would have said in the past, you know, we didn't want to be giving out additional life jackets in the Northern Hemisphere and the Western world when there were no life jackets for poorer countries. And you know, we've seen that come home to roost in the context of what's happening in Southern Africa. But I think, like, from our perspective, what we want to try and do, vaccines are obviously a key component of our response to this, but we've a very high force of infection in the community at the moment. We've far too many cases, and we can't just vaccinate our way out of it. They're a part of it,
okay,
but we also need to try and control it.
Yeah, we'll come back to that in a second. One more question on boosters, and this is not your bailiwick, but people will be wondering. When do you think everyone's going to get boosted, boy?
I don't know, to be honest. Like, as you said, I heard that the vaccines for children are due end of December, sort of early January. So, and I think the 60s are due to be done sort of by the end of the year, and the over 50s starting in mid-December. So the short, I honestly don't know, but realistically it's going to be the first quarter of the new year, I would imagine.
Listen, so on that force of infection in the community, there was a slight background noise, wasn't there, that things might be stabilising a little bit last week. And I think in people's wishful thinking minds, we're thinking, okay, so we're going to have this a little bit under control and maybe we can have a little bit of a Christmas. Is that still seem to be happening? Are you seeing any stabilization there, or are you seeing the fact that people pull back a bit starting to kick in at all?
Personally, I think we are, and because I think, like, it's really important to highlight that the population has been so responsive over the last 18 months. You know what I mean? Like, they're not fools. When they see the figures going the wrong way, they generally change their behaviour. And if you look at the last, say, week, 10 days, we have seen the number of people in hospital start to stabilise. We've seen the number of people in intensive care start to stabilise. And also you can see the rate of increase in the number of cases we have is slowing. But I think the key thing for us to remember is that we're by no means out of the woods, purely because we can't afford to plateau at this kind of level. You know, we've still got, I think, over 550 people in hospital, over 100 people in intensive care, and we've got about 4,500 cases per day. So that plateau is not good enough for us. But you're right, we are certainly seeing some early signs that things may be slowing down, and I would ask people just to continue to redouble their efforts, and as I said, if they're called for boosters, to go and get them in, but just to reduce their number of contacts.
When it turns, could it drop quite quickly? That seems to be another narrative that's out there. The phrase "drop like a stone" is used here and there in the newspapers from sources.
I personally struggle to see that until we've very large parts of the population vaccinated, purely because the virus is so transmissible. And again, if people remember to, after the wave that we had in December, January, February at the start of this year, you know, the rate of decline, although we came down quite sharply from the very high peak when Alpha became dominant, the rate of decline slowed, and we never really got down to the same levels that, you know, we got back to in summer of 2020. So,
okay, and in terms of what what's on people's minds at the moment, are you saying we're not going to have this under control by Christmas, really?
No, I don't think I would say that. I think like we've, 4 weeks to Christmas? Yeah. So I think we've a lot of time to get to a lower level than where we are now. But realistically, I think what we're looking at from a control perspective, and you've touched on it in the context of the boosters, we kind of need sort of we need to think of this as a society. We need to think of this over, as a winter plan. We can't think of this as getting through Christmas. We need to think of December, January, February, and we need to work together to bring this under control and to keep it under control, because what we can't afford to do is what we did, what happened last year, where we had a good Christmas, if you like, or not a normal Christmas, but we had increased socialization around Christmas and then a massive spike afterwards. We can't do that again. We need to think about this as a 3-month project, but we can do that and we can manage it because we're in a better place now with vaccines.
Okay, but we're not looking at any kind of a normal Christmas and normal Christmas socializing, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I would be very surprised. I don't think, and I think that's the right thing, because I think what people need to remember, like, what's much better about this year is that everything in society, the majority of things are pretty much open now, albeit with some additional public health measures in place. But we didn't have influenza last year. We didn't have RSV last year. We have those now. Influenza hasn't arrived. So even without COVID, we would expect to see pressure on the health service in December, January, February because of influenza. Mm. So again, I would encourage people to take up the influenza vaccine. But we're concerned about seeing what happens with influenza. We've had a very small number of cases so far. The virus we're seeing is influenza AH3, which can tend to give a more severe season than influenza AH1. Really? So again, very early days, but we need to know that now that these viruses are back.
Do you mean bigger numbers?
Either larger numbers or more people in hospital, yeah. And that's the thing that we want to try and prevent. So,
and when you say that we haven't seen much of it so far, is there any way you can predict where that curve is going or anything?
And no, not at the moment. But people, I suppose the key is people still have time to get their vaccine, because the vaccine will take a couple of weeks to take effect. But so if people get the vaccine, as I said, we've had a small number of, like, fewer, you know, single digit numbers of cases each week over the last couple of weeks. So it certainly hasn't peaked yet, or hasn't kicked off yet, but it's something that we want to keep an eye on.
Okay. Now, on all that, I think this advice for children for the next 2 weeks, avoid play dates, no nativities, and, you know, what do they call it? Indoor community settings. So people are calling this a lockdown on kids, and I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with it. Do people just need to suck it up? Is this necessary, do you think? And should people be just keeping their kids at home?
So I think that it's really important that we get the communication around this correct. And Martin Cormack has spoken very nicely about this. We've spoken a lot about kids over the course of the last 2 years. We haven't necessarily spoken to them an awful lot. So what's really important with these measures is that this is not the children's fault. This is not about punishing children. What we have to do as a society is protect children. What we have done, albeit unintentionally, with our vaccination program is corral this virus into the unvaccinated cohort. And we've seen the increase in rates of infection between 5 and 12 year olds. So as a society, they haven't been eligible for vaccination up till this week now. And obviously we would, as I don't have children myself, but certainly I'm in favour of vaccinating children, but there will be differences of opinion on that, which is fine.
But in the meantime, they need to go to school and then stay at home?
Absolutely, but it's important. It's about protecting the children as a society. It's not about punishing them. And the ways we can do that, we have the vaccine and we have the non-pharmaceutical interventions, and that's why we would have introduced the masks, recommended the masks for third class and upwards, because if we look at the incidence of disease, it is still interesting about this virus that children get more susceptible as they approach, I suppose, the teenage years and adult years. Children, as a general rule, do seem to be still less susceptible, regardless of the variant. But as I said, what we need to do as a society is protect the children until we can get vaccines into them. And as I said, I appreciate that's a different discussion, but it's not about punishing children.
I think people get that in general. But what we are saying to keep them at home for the next few weeks.
Now, absolutely. And it is a temporary measure.
Should that be given as a directive rather than advice? Because you know what I think a lot of people think when you give advice like that? That the same mugs who always did the right thing and will keep their children at home, the people who don't always want to go along with the rules will do what they want anyway. But everyone gets the same outcome in the end. So basically, the mugs feel like mugs all over again. There's no great incentive to do it if everyone isn't doing it. So should they just make it simple for people and say, look, this is the rule?
No, I take that point. And I suppose what we always try to do insofar as we can is to try and bring people along with us. And you're right. I suppose there tends to be an escalation process where it starts off as advice. And then if it's not working, and the thing is, we will monitor it and see what compliance is like and see how effective it is. And then if the tone of the message needs to change and needs to become more strict, then we can look at that. But I suppose ideally, it's like everything. If people choose to do something voluntarily, they're more likely to continue to do it for a period of time and take it on board.
Okay. Listen, it's against every fibre in my being to say this to you, and I don't want to be the one to bring up this spectre, but you do hear more and more parents wondering, would it be an idea to close the schools a week early before Christmas, just in terms of people seeing their grandparents, in terms of maybe just generally helping the situation. I know that schools are the last thing we want to close, the first thing we want to open and everything, but you'd wonder, would you get away with it that week before Christmas to just extend the break there? Is there any thoughts on that?
To my knowledge, it's not something that we've discussed as an effort at this point in time. I don't know if there have been discussions within the Department of Education to look at it. I think it's like the key thing for people to appreciate, I suppose, that we never rule anything out, and we'd always be guided by the disease, the level of disease and what's happening at a point in time. And as I said, we're 3 or 4 weeks away at the moment. Like, the reason we've made the recommendations that we have this week is purely because of the level of disease in that cohort. And we do hear from public health colleagues on the ground that the outbreaks tend not to be in schools. They tend to be around the other activities.
You know, a lot of people don't believe that.
Absolutely. I appreciate that completely. But in the context of what we're trying to do to minimise the risks to children and minimise the risk of harm, as you said, schools are a really important component of what we want to try and keep open. But we will obviously keep the disease under review over the next couple of weeks. And if we need to make recommendations around that, then we'll look at it.
Okay, Cillian de Gascoigne, thanks a lot for that, and we'll take a break.